is this woman? She walks down the road with a swing in her step and a lift to her head. She radiates allure as if followed by a personal spotlight. She is real and walking the streets of every city, town and village in Italy right now. She is the embodiment of bella figura. And today I have Iranian-born Kamin Mohammadi, who came to live in the UK in 1979. She went on to have a very successful career working on glossy magazines in London. But 10 years ago, she went to stay in a friend's flat in Florence, in Italy, for a couple of months, but she never came back. But the great news is she's in London today and on Radio Gorgeous's Red Bed, and we're talking all things Italian. Her book, Bella Figura, How to Live, Love and Eat the Italian Way, is out now. Buongiorno, or I should say buonasera, Kamin, and a big warm welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Ciao, Josephine. Hi. Lovely to meet you. Lovely to be here. And what a lovely bed.
Thank you. So tell us how you ended up in Florence 10 years ago. How bad was it?
You know, so I went there by accident. And that's really the thing. As you said, I went there for 6 weeks, 2 months, 10 years ago. And what happened is that I was struggling in London, like we often do. You know, I had my lovely career. But it wasn't quite working out as I would have hoped. I had everything I wanted, but it was somehow making me sick, actually. You know, there was just too much exposure to long-term stress, and I just was in a bit of despair, really. Not quite understanding that I was in quite so much despair, but anyway, I was lucky enough to meet one day my sort of guardian angel, my fairy godmother, a beautiful, beautiful person called Christabel, who is a writer, and she said to me, she took pity on me, and she said, listen, I've got a flat in Florence. Why don't you just take a few weeks off and go and stay in my flat and work on this book that you've been talking about for so long? And I thought, well, that's a lovely fantasy, but who can drop everything and just go off to Florence, right? So I didn't really take it seriously. But Christabel did, and somehow there was some kind of magic around that, I guess, because somehow my job fell away, my flat fell away, even my cat walked out on me. You know, I was suddenly left with nothing. So I thought, okay, I guess I'll go to Florence. So that's how that happened.
But when you arrived, you weren't in a good physical state, according to the book.
I was not. I was, you know, the irony is that I had been probably on paper, I was living the most healthy life that I ever had, because I was, you know, the editor of a bunch of glossy magazines. So I really had access to everything in terms of diets, nutritionists, you know, this kind of workout.
Latest spa.
The latest spa. Yeah. Everything, you know, every fad going was on offer, and I was following all of them. And, you know, I had given up smoking, I'd given up eating meat, I'd given up drinking, I was doing yoga like 5 times a week, I was really on everything. And yet, I went from a sort of dress size 8-10 when I started this job to within a year, I'd gone up about 3 dress sizes. And, you know,
you said even your skin was not
good.
Oh,
it was so distressing. After a while, my skin broke out, and I'd never really suffered from acne and stuff when I was a teenager. So I was really shocked. And, you know, to be in your 30s, fronting a really public job, and, you know, in that kind of environment where just the lift ride, you know, to the office every day was like a trial as everyone looked you up and down. It was really kind of shaming, weirdly. And then you also feel bad for feeling bad about things that are actually quite, you know, superficial. But I felt awful. Nothing fit me. I didn't know where to put myself. I literally didn't want to face people because I just was, you know, not recognizing the person that I'd become. And alongside all of that, the serious kind of stuff was that it didn't matter how much I slept, I could never stop being tired. I was you know, unless I was there at the office and I was there 70 hours a week, you know, unless I was there making all the decisions, doing deadlines, I sort of became this sort of brain fogged person that couldn't really make decisions. My personal life just kind of stopped existing. I lived in the office, you know, I was single, I had a cat, it was all a bit like that. And it just didn't matter how many sort of diets I tried and how many nutritionists I went to, I couldn't get rid of the tiredness, the acne, the weight gain. You know, I once went to a nutritionist who got me to keep a food diary. And when I showed it to her, she looked at me and she said, are you lying? Because she could not believe that that was my diet, but the result of it was this. And that it, I wasn't, you know, and I never stopped gaining weight. Like, it just kept going on.
It's bizarre.
It was bizarre.
So you ended up in Florence, going to spend 8 weeks there. And the biggest shock is that you found out that everybody's eating carbs day and night. They're slopping olive oil on everything. They're not going to the gym. And they... And you're speeding past them and you suddenly realise that you are different than them.
Yes, absolutely. It was really a kind of revelation, actually, you know, that I had terrible digestive problems also, which I couldn't, you know, not identify as anything, however much I went to the doctor. But so things weren't working. And yes, yeah, so I got there and I started to look around and notice really quickly, as you say, that there was this lifestyle going on around me, but everyone seemed much happier, much healthier, much more beautiful, you know, stylish, everything. But they were doing everything that I had sort of learned in the lifestyle I was leading was poison, you know, a diet made of pasta, pizza, bread, gelato, God, you know, olive oil, you know. But actually, I didn't know anybody. I didn't speak a word of Italian. I didn't have Wi-Fi in my flat to begin with. So I was, and this was in the days actually 10 years ago, before smartphones and before we were constantly connected. So I was really kind of thrown back into my own resources. And I had to engage a little bit more with the world. I had to go out, I was on a very tight budget. I had to go shop in the market. And I think that's what started to really change things, was when I went to the market and I reconnect, and I just found this joy there. And I reconnected with food, actually, with real proper food, you know, there that was locally grown, it was seasonal, it was delicious. I'm sure your listeners, you know, are all fans of Italian food. The ingredients are just wonderful. And that just, you know, that just started to shift my thinking away from how I had thought about food, which had almost become my enemy, you know, particularly bread, poor old bread. And I started to think, I stopped counting calories, I stopped having rules, I just went, you know, for the time that I'm here, I'm just going to enjoy it. So I had to cook for myself because I couldn't afford to eat out. So I'm not much of a cook, so it had to all be really simple stuff. So, you know, people in the market would say, okay, take the tomato and do this with it today. You know, luckily they're very bossy, the Italians, when it comes to food. So they kind of guided me. My flat was opposite one of the best bakeries in town, so I went and bought bread, you know, traditional bread. Did not have those effects on me, that, you know, all the allergies, the intolerances, the IBS, all of that stuff just didn't seem to be triggered by the food that I was eating. So I started to do what the Italians were doing, and because of the connection with the food and how beautiful and exciting it was, my point of view changed. Food's mealtime stopped being about what I couldn't and shouldn't eat, and they started being about pleasure. Pleasure, pure and simple. And, you know, just pleasure didn't have to be about a fancy three-course dinner. It could just be about a really good tomato with, you know, just explosions of sunshine in your mouth. I think that was a really key shift in my thinking.
Exactly. Now, the expression bella figura, where did you first hear it and what does it mean to Italians?
So the bella figura, I suppose the easiest way is the English equivalent would be something like keeping up appearances.
Which
sounds terrible.
Because that's sort of keeping up, that's the kind of keeping up your middle class values. Absolutely. And trying not to slip, you know, class wise.
Well, there's a sort of an element of bella figura which could be interpreted like that. It's not quite that, but it is about, you know, presenting a beautiful face to the world. You know, it's making the beautiful figure, and you make it, you know, you aren't it. So it's interesting. How I decided to interpret bella figura, and how I have in this book, which is more my version than anything else, is just to really go deeply into this concept of bella figura. Because what I noticed is it wasn't just about how people looked or how they appeared. It informed everything. It informed how they did everything. It informed the words that they used, the way that they spoke to each other. You know, a pavement could be bella or brutta, depending on whether it was good or bad. You know, so I noticed that this thing of beauty was not just this kind of superficial thing, perhaps, that I had considered, but that it goes very deep in the Italian psyche. And it was informing everything.
Give us some examples. Like, you know, so you say, if you were going out before you like put on your jogging bottoms and run out the house, what would you do when you lived there?
Thank you. Exactly. I'd become so shy of looking in the mirror. So, and I was quite sort of, you know, and I was just dressing in sort of black shifts and, you know, that sort of uniform. So, and I didn't really want to look at myself. So in Italy, I kind of learned actually to take a bit more care. So, and I'm not, you know, I'm not at all saying women, you have to put on your lipstick before you go out because you should do what you want. And it was just more about the fact that before I stepped out the door, I paused and I thought, let me put on those beautiful earrings that I save for a special occasion. This is what I started to realize that it was. And it cheered me up, you know, and then it became a little bit like that. Well, actually, if that makes me feel good, why don't I do it again? I was told quite early on when someone explained the concept of bella figura to me, I was told, you know what, to wait for a party or a man or an occasion to put on your best clothes or to look the best that you can or, you know, to put on the stuff that makes you feel special is a stupid thing to do. You should do this for yourself all the time and every day. And I did. And actually what it did is it kind of injected a lot of self-respect into my life. Because it was about sort of saying, you know, I'm going to eat lunch now. I'm not. So in London, I would grab a sandwich or let's say a pre-cooked sort of health thing, you know, prepackaged. And I would eat it in front of the computer, you know, at work as quickly as possible, unplugged from the rest of the world. Whereas in Italy, I was by myself. So I laid a table. I put out a nice napkin. I took care. You know, and it just made it, the stuff that I was eating was not very, it wasn't occasion food, you know, but just regular food, just to put a piece of toast with some tomato on it, but to make it an occasion to honor that little meal time. It started to really change the rhythm of my days.
Also, it was what you were doing as you were beginning to like yourself again.
Yes.
Don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what, Josephine? I think the two went together. Because actually, if you start thinking about, let's say, the bella figura, as I've described it, as being not about other people, but about yourself, it becomes a really beautiful practice. Because what it does is it kind of shows, it encourages you to find the beauty in every aspect of your life as you're doing it, whether someone else is there watching or not. So, it became an act of self-love, I suppose. You know, the fact that I bothered for myself to stop and to lay a table for lunch. You know, I bothered to get out those beautiful earrings, not because I was hoping to impress anybody, but because, you know, when I wear them, I feel happy. So, yes.
So it's really good. So we've all got that scented candle we're thinking, save till best. Mm. We've all got that dress that we think we're only going to wear it at the christening or the wedding. Don't. Put it on tonight. Light that scented candle. It doesn't matter if it goes. You can get another one. Use that beautiful bath oil as well that you're saving for best.
Yes, you know. And use it for you. I mean, who better? Who better than you? And there is that. How are you going to go out into the world and love other people if you don't begin with that sense of respect and love for yourself? And something about, you know, the food and the market and the connection with the food also really fed into that. Because when, you know, a tomato tasted so good and was so special and everyone in the market was, you know, people were excited because suddenly it was artichoke season.
Yeah, carciofi.
Yeah, right? And you know how it is. You go to the market.
I go bonkers. I buy like 2 kilos and I cook them in every different way.
Yeah, because, you know, you go there and or there's something and I'm, you know, you go to the market and you find something there and you say, what is this?
Yeah, no idea.
And they don't know. Mm. They don't even know what it's called. But they know that for 2 weeks, you know, in this month,
if they forage in that particular place there, they're going to find this and it's amazing. Mm-hmm. And you are going to buy it every day for those 2 weeks because you've only got it for those 2 weeks. So you are going to cook that and you're going to eat that. And
so you're getting in the rhythm of life and nature as well.
Absolutely. Reconnection back to the seasons. And you know, I grew up in Iran. And so our life there was quite old fashioned in that sense because, you know, I would go to the market with my mom and we did have a life where it was seasonal and things were connected, you know, because it was the 70s, I guess, and that was our culture. So I was really used to that thing where, you know, oh, it's really exciting, fresh pistachios have arrived today, you know, and that excitement, there's something we have called goat, you know, I could name so many things. And I hadn't thought that much, you know, in the intervening 30 years. I'd missed it, but I hadn't quite realised, you know, and I'd always felt really sad shopping in the supermarket. And I couldn't quite, you know, and I always preferred going to markets and stuff, but obviously it doesn't fit in with your life when you're working hard. Back in that market in Florence, I really reconnected with that childhood experience that I'd had. And that was a whole other layer of it, I suppose, for me.
Tell us about the physicality of Florence. You know, its architecture, how that affected you.
God, the beauty, Josephine, the beauty, the light. You know, I arrived in January, the weather wasn't good. It was really cold. You know, you don't always expect Italy to be cold, right? But Florence gets colder than London. It was really cold, it rained a lot. But didn't matter, I needed to be out. You know, I just needed to be out discovering this new place. And I didn't have much choice. I couldn't stay in and just hide, which is what I wanted to do sometimes. Because if I just wanted to, you know, do some work or connect with the world, I had to go and find some Wi-Fi out there. So I had to go and do that. There were no anonymous supermarkets in my neighborhood. You know, I couldn't hide. I had to engage with people all the time. So I was always out. And it took me a little while to lose my London pace. I was rushing around the place and for various reasons, I started to understand that I should maybe slow down and I had to train myself to slow down. But in the slowing down, I started to notice not just this beautiful architecture and stuff that was around, but the details. Mm. And for me to this day, Florence is it's a dream, you know, it's so beautiful and it's different to other Italian towns, you know. Rome is so extraordinary. You're driving down the street and there's a Roman temple, you know, just there. Florence is mostly from one period.
Is it Renaissance?
Yeah. Mm. It's the mostly built in the Renaissance. So
that's like 13th, 14th century, isn't it?
Yeah, from there right up until the 17th. Mm-hmm. Very harmonious. Mm. It's very, very harmonious. Mm. You know, you haven't got masses of different periods all jostling for space like you have in somewhere like Rome. Mm. Florence is very harmonious. The beauty is just very consistent. Mm. And it's very solid, Florence. You know, it's not dreamlike like Venice. You know, in Florence, they built fortresses because the leading families of the Renaissance were bankers. So their houses, their palaces were like forts because, you know, and they invented banking. They invented the coin. They invented fashion. Yeah. they were really active in Florence. I started to understand why the Renaissance had happened there because the quality of the light, even in January, was so extraordinary. And the feeling of the place, there was just this lovely pace. It was a city, but for a Londoner, it was like a village. Yeah. You know, I could walk it. I didn't see any reason to ever get on a bus. I could walk everywhere, and it was just those details, the architecture, the little, you know, looking down at the sort of a gas hole cover with the fleur-de-lis of Florence etched on it. You know, mundane things. You have a traffic cone, but it's got, again, the fleur-de-lis of Florence on it. You know, you look up above a doorway and there's the coat of arms of the family that built that palace. You know, there are a thousand, you know, when I take friends around Florence, I don't take them to the Uffizi. I walk them around and I go, look at that, that's called the Buchetta del Vino. It's a little hole that's on the side of the palace where, you know, when the family came from the country with the wine, they would sell glasses of wine through this Buchetta del Vino, you know. And that, when you know little things like that, it also really opens up.
Charm.
Yeah, and it shows you how they lived. And it's just full of that. Little fountains on the corners with, you know, used to have spring water from the hills running through them. Mm. Lots of little, what they call tabernacoli, these little insets in the side of roads, that of the beautiful cases, sort of cases with glass, but you know, they're frescoes of the Madonna, the Annunciation, or whatever. You know, you just don't stop. And
you're living with it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I can't believe
it. It's in your soul every day.
You know, I couldn't believe it. To me, it seemed preposterous that this place existed and people actually had real lives there. Like they went and did jobs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it was like a dreamlike sort of holiday thing. And what was wonderful about where I was living is it was a very local neighborhood. You know, it didn't have tourists in it. So it was really that rhythm.
And how did you find the Florentines? Tell us about their character particularly.
They were so friendly. They were so sociable. They were such good fun. Within 3 days, even though I was in stress and burnout and all sorts of terrible things, and I just wanted to hide, and I'm a Londoner, so I didn't want to look at anybody or engage anyway. I just wanted to rush off as quickly as possible. I didn't really have any choice, because actually Florence is small, so the Florentines, you know, they see you on this street in the morning, and then they see you on this other street in the afternoon, and they stop and they say, hi, I saw you there earlier. And you go, okay. So within 3 days, I knew everybody on my street. I knew them. I knew their names, you know. And they knew, and we didn't have a common language.
Wow.
But, you know, they're communicators, and I'm Iranian, so I guess I am too. Yeah. And it just, you know, their enthusiasm just burnt away all of my shyness or awkwardness.
Oh.
And, you know, that's what the Italians have, enthusiasm. Joy for life, you know. You go, I used to go to this cafe, well, I still do. But when I was there and they said, what are you doing? And I said, oh, I'm trying to write a book. Every time I went into this cafe.
Try, I like the word. Yeah. That was the problem.
You know, right? Right. So every time I went there and I opened up my notebook and I started to write something, everybody from behind the bar, they all clapped and went, brava! You know, it's like, wow, you've got a cheerleading squad, you know, for everything that you do. So so it was a bit like, well, try to be sad here. You know, just try. People are so friendly. And they had time. And they took time. They had the time of day. And they love to spend the time of day. You know what I mean? Meet someone on a corner, have a chat for 20 minutes.
How did you chat? Because you couldn't speak the language at first. Pidgin English, pidgin Italian?
Well, in the market with my guy, we used to mime.
Yeah, yeah.
We did a lot
of miming. It really works, that.
We did a lot of miming. Mm. And it was a mixture of gestures, intonation, me recognizing some words they were, but it's really about the will to communicate. Mm-hmm. They wanted to communicate, and then so I did. So we just somehow understood each other.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and
it's like children getting together but don't speak a different language. They can communicate easily.
Absolutely.
It's just, as you say, the will and the openness to also make a bit of a fool of yourself.
Yes.
I mean, so many people are scared of language, whereas I'll do like actions and funny things and faces and things, and they think it's hilarious.
Hilarious. You know what? Even the other day, 10 years later, I was with my stepkids, and I said, oh, I was wearing this ring, but I mispronounced the word, and she died laughing because I said I was wearing a lamb. So
very good.
And but it, you know, I had to get rid of that shyness really quickly and just let it be hilarious if I made mistakes, because actually people love it, you know?
Yeah, they do, especially Italians. They don't pick you up. They think it's a great fun. Now let's talk about the book, because I love the way it's done throughout a year like a diary. And all sorts of things happen, and I can't tell all the stories, but there is romance in there for people. There's romance and food, which, sorry, that's all we really care about. Now, I'm going to take April, because that's now, and I'm going to... So it's chapter 4, and it's called Fare l'amore, or How to Take a Lover. The produce of the season is artichokes, which you just mentioned, carciofi. Scent of the city, orange and lemon blossom.
Oh.
Isn't that amazing? Italian moment, kissing in the Siena's Campo, which is, Siena's a beautiful town and the Campo's this gorgeous square. Italian word of a month, baciami, is it?
Baciami,
is that kiss me?
Kiss me.
Oh.
Baciami, amore, baciami. I mean, have you heard two more wonderful words together?
I've got goosebumps.
Baciami, amore, kiss me, my love. Yes, that was the...
So wonderful. So every chapter has got this, the smell, the language, the taste. It's beautifully written.
I had that. Thank you. I had to do it like that. You know what? Because that's really how I experienced it. Because I was constantly thinking, am I about to leave? Right? So, because I wasn't really meant to be there. And with Cristobal, she took such delight in how much I love the city because she loves it so much. And she was getting to share it. And she was sharing her flat and her tower and her friends and her neighbours. And it was wonderful. So we were speaking about that a lot. And so, you know, we would just literally, time would go and she'd go, well, why don't you stay? And I'd go, okay. You know, so it was a little bit like that. So every month I wasn't really sure if I, you know, what
but
I was doing.
But that means if you're not sure, you embrace it more because it's in the moment.
I think you're absolutely right. And so I was really noticing every month, every week, the changes, you know. Again, another thing that was a bit like going, I suppose, going back to Iran, going to Florence, was the sensuality of the place, the scents, you know, the flowers, the fragrances. You know, I used to, when I was a kid, my aunties put jasmine flowers on my pillows before I went to sleep that night. I know, my granny, like all the old ladies, had jasmine flowers down her front. You know, that was her perfume.
How wonderful.
I know, and then you know, and then obviously over here, we don't have such a richness of that kind of scent, you know, the narcissi. And then suddenly there I was in Italy, and I was noticing, well, I was noticing stuff because I was slow. I was slowing down, so I was noticing that in January there was the smell of wood smoke all over the city and how lovely it was. And I, you know, noticed that actually in February that changed. And then in March you started to get the first sense of the wisteria that was beginning to come out. And because it's small and my neighbourhood was a small particular way, these smells do pervade yours. Mm. You know, in June you walk out of the door and it's like jasmine. Literally what? Slaps you in the face.
God,
you, it's like you walk into it. Boom. Even when I was leaving actually the other day, Pisa, already in Pisa, the jasmine was out. You know, I went and checked into the airport and this waft of jasmine. So I really experienced it like that with the produce, you know, with every month, the different things that were coming into season, with the little words that I was, you know, that I was learning, with what the city was turning into. So I really wanted to write it like that. I wanted it to be a sort of journal of a year in that city and, you know, and why every month had its own special flavour.
Now, at the back of a book, there's sort of list and tips of Bella Figura and how we live the life. But the only one I'm going to focus on, actually, is one that you say very early on in the book, which is take olive oil every day. Can you explain this?
So I was looking very haggard, I suppose, and acne scarred and, you know, all sorts of things. And my sort of best friend in the first month, you know, I was, a few people told me really early on, they, you know, because Italians will tell you that. They're like, hi, you're looking fat today.
That's the downside.
Right?
Bit too honest.
So I had, you know, my friend, the old man, old Roberto, he would come and see me in the street, and a couple of days in a row, he just kind of kept saying to me, oh, you look very tired. And I was like, oh, that's not good. I'm sleeping a lot. So I was speaking to my friend about it, and he said, here you are, try this. And I had met his mother at that point, who was 76, and I'd seen her skin. And he said to me, she swears by drinking olive oil. And I was like,
drinking.
I can't drink oil. Yeah. I'd started to lose weight, Josephine. That was the weird thing, completely without thinking about it, without planning, without calorie. I was walking a lot and I was eating my very natural, simple, delicious, amazing food. And I wasn't, you know, stressing myself out. And I just noticed that my clothes were getting looser and looser and looser.
Fabulous.
I was pretty fabulous. Especially since my mission was to try a different gelateria every day. So I really was doing that. So Luigo said to me, listen, you need to drink olive oil. And I was like, I can't drink oil. I'm losing weight, finally. I can't drink oil. Mm. And he said, come on and go and look it up. So he said, my mum swears by this. You know, it's a real kind of old-fashioned Italian sort of... You know, the teenagers in Italy, let's say, at least the older generations, before they were going out on a Saturday night to party, they'd take a tablespoon of olive oil. You know, like how we would eat bread to soak up the alcohol.
Yeah.
So there's that. There's people that kind of swear by drinking a little bit of olive oil in the morning because before you do anything else, because it totally protects your system, your digestive system. It, you know, smooths everything out. Anyway, I went and I did a little bit of research. And I saw that there was, you know, as we know, but the amount of benefits to kind of really good extra virgin olive oil just was extraordinary, actually. So I went, oh, okay, I'll try it. But obviously, if you're going to drink oil as opposed to put it on your food, it's got to be really good. And that was where the education of my palate started. And where I had to learn that actually, you know what, you do really do need to get the best quality. You might not have any money. That doesn't mean you get the bad stuff, you just get smaller.
So this is an internal face cream. It's an internal face cream. It's also brilliant for your hair. It's also, because I interviewed someone earlier today, it's fantastic for the menopause because it's got lots of natural estrogen-producing benefits.
Amazing.
So yes. let's try some. You brought some along with you.
I did.
You know, how much do you have?
Said what I think is a little controversial. I've said 4 tablespoons a day. Now, I think you could put those 4 tablespoons on your food. But I would say that at least one of those you should just try and swallow.
A tablespoon.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could start with a teaspoon if a tablespoon feels too
much. I might start by doing 4 teaspoons a day. In fact,
try it. Will you take the Bella Figura olive oil challenge?
Yeah, okay.
So, I have to say, and I brought this olive oil for you, Josephine, because this is produced, this is olive oil that we produce, actually. I produce now. I'm an olive oil farmer. And so I know, you know, it's farm to table. I know exactly where it comes from. And I think it's delicious. Do you?
It's very good. In fact, I'm going to have more. Having seconds, I'm now having a whole... It's a bit bitter, but that's good.
Well, the bitterness stimulates a bunch of things. I mean, it all has, you know, it's
kind of got lemony flavour.
It's extraordinary. And because this is the green oil, so this was, you know, harvested in October, at which point it's like bright green. So a lot of the colour has faded, of course, but it's considered fresh for like about a year or 9 months or something. So this is still fresh.
Yeah.
So this stuff is, especially the, so the green oil, which I've realised doesn't necessarily exist that much in the UK. We don't know very much about it. It's the first press of the olives. So it costs more because the olives are smaller, so you need a lot more to get oil out of it. It's green. I mean, if I I'll show you.
Even from black olives, it's green.
I think it's from green olives.
Okay.
So it's green and it's got more of everything that olive oil has. More antioxidants, more polyphenols, more chlorophyll. So particularly with the chlorophyll part is what's good for menopausal symptoms. It's got so many benefits. So
do you really take 4? I'm just testing you.
Yeah.
Do you really have 4 tablespoons a day?
I do, but I take it in my food now.
Okay.
So I will. We
so
cook.
That's cold though, isn't it? Do we need to say that, or can you?
Well, do you know what, we actually cook with this oil. Lots of people say don't because, but we do. We cook. We do everything. People I give it to in the UK often save it for not cooking, but for salads or whatever. I would definitely cook with it, maybe not to a super high temperature, but you know, cook with it. We put it cold over obviously salads, vegetables.
Yeah, vegetables, it's so good. Lemon and olive oil on any vegetable really brings out the flavour.
You know, especially your beautiful Italian produce, whatever, it's just so special.
And there's another tip on tomatoes, never add lemon or any, just only olive oil on tomatoes.
A little bit of salt.
Yeah, because otherwise it's too acidic, because they're already acidic. In fact, it was an Italian that taught me that.
Absolutely, you know, and it's just, and do you know what I discovered also?
Tell me what happened though, sorry to interrupt, because we are getting closer to the time when we're going to have to stop. Tell me the difference you noticed when you started taking this large amount of olive oil.
After about 2 or 3 weeks, I didn't necessarily notice the difference, but what I noticed is that, okay, so I would sit in the cafe every morning and the vegetable delivery guy would go by with, you know, his trolley of vegetables, and he would say ciao and I would say ciao, and that happened every morning. And by the way, in my miserable time in London, I'd been totally single. There had also been another element. I thought in Italy that would change. No one had looked at me. I was equally invisible, you know, until the morning the vegetable delivery guy went by, and this time he said hello and I said hello and I smiled at him and he fell over. And his vegetables went all over the place. He crashed into a table. It was a real mess, you know. And I went, And when he came back from delivering his vegetables, he kind of, he tossed a napkin with his phone number written in it on my table. And I went, interesting. Why am I interesting today, not yesterday? And then I went out to the market. And on the way, I smiled at 3 other guys on mopeds and they all crashed. And I know this sounds like, I mean, I couldn't believe
sounds
it.
Sounds like a Roman holiday or something.
I actually thought I was hallucinating, honestly. I really did. I just went, well, this is obviously a trip. So I went to my friend, you know, and I was like, what's going on? And that's when I looked and I went, hang on a minute. Where are my acne scars? And isn't my hair looking fab? And is it? And I think it was just that. It was the plump, smooth skin. It was the bright eyes. It was the glossy hair. And that's where I saw. And actually, you know, I didn't have digestive problems anymore. I didn't. I had lots of energy. It was great. So I now don't take 4 tablespoons a day like that, like medicine. That was, you know, I will if I'm having an issue with my body. I'll go through a phase where I'll do that. But I will, yeah, but we use a lot of olive oil every day on everything.
And your book is a way of life, but also a love story. And I know it ends happily. And you're still in Florence, in the countryside now, 10 years later. So thank you so much, Carmen, for coming onto Radio Gorgeous.
Thanks so much, Josephine. I've really enjoyed talking to you.
Bella Figura by Carmen Mohammadi is published by Bloomsbury. And you will find many Bellas on Radio Gorgeous. Sign up today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Grazie.
Thank you, Bella.